Hey there everyone, it's Joel here. Just a little intro to this podcast. We wanted to record a end of year review of 2015, one whole episode. But I am going to split this into two parts because it's now about three hours long, which is a ridiculous time really to sit down and listen to. So I've split it. The first part will be our first recording we've done. What happened was we sat down in the first week of January and recorded, me, Lewis and Tom. But Lewis had to dash off. He had an issue to deal with and never returned. Me and Tom kind of carried on with it, thinking he would jump back in at any point. But after over an hour of kind of dilly-dallying then to continue record, he didn't turn back up. So we actually called it night because I was so tired. I was literally slurring and falling asleep, and Tom had work the next day, so we called it a night and we hoped to catch up a few days or maybe a week later. We didn't sit down until about a month later to record the second part because of schedules not lining up. So we did actually sit down, record it, and then I edited it all, gave it to the other two to listen to, and they was like, no, well, do this, do that. And like, I thought, well, there's not enough time to get this done and out properly before I had to then record and edit the Netrunner one. So I said, okay, I'm going to concentrate on the Netrunner, put that out, and then put this out a week later. So you're going to get the first part. Well, you've got the first part. You're listening to it. The second part will come out on Wednesday. And then the week after, on Monday, there's going to be the next chat show. So that's the plan of this. So do be aware Lewis will disappear halfway, well, towards the end of it. The first bit is basically us discussing our year, our favourite bits and all like that. We go into Kickstarter stuff and then we go into news. Listen, enjoy. If you don't want to listen, it's old news, it's old hat. Skip it. And we'll see you for the chat show. Joel Wright, I am your host of this podcast, and I also like to introduce my other hosts.
Hi, I'm Tom.
Hi, I'm Lewis, just a bloke they find on the streets every now and again.
He turns up, that's all that counts. So as the first Devon Dice episode, yeah, it's now the third Devon Dice episode. Was planned to be the first, but because of all the issues we came across, it's now been pushed to be the third episode and then the fourth episode. So, oops. Oh, and I do apologise for audio on Tom and Lewis's side. We had an issue with Tom's audio, so I had to use the Skype feed. We will be clearing this up in the future episode, so please bear with it. It's not too bad. He's just a bit quiet. To release this year, we are going to be reviewing 2015 in the board gaming industry. The ups, the downs, the highs, the lows, the gaming rejoices, the gaming failures. And we would just like to start off with our gaming experiences. So, Lewis, anything you'd like to highlight in last year?
Yes, I think that last year was a tipping point for me with my gaming tastes. I think there was a moment, I think mid-year kind of thing, that I realised that convoluted and over-complex mechanisms in games put me right off. Whereas I think the prevailing kind of few years was kind of like I wanted to get my teeth into a lot of games that did that. I realised that, A, I'm not very good at them because of the mechanics kind of confuse me a lot of times. But, B, I don't get any enjoyment from mind-melting games. And I've kind of erred on the side of, I wouldn't say simpler games, but just fun, enjoyable, a bit lighter. I hate to use that word, but those kind of games. So, yes, I found that that as a whole has shaped a lot of my gaming experiences over the years.
So that would be all of Paul Grogan's game collection out the window then?
Basically, yeah. Yeah, basically.
Oh, yeah, he's got concept, hasn't he? So it's not too bad.
Exactly. There you go. I'm fine.
He's got a very wide-ranging set of different heavinesses of board games available.
Well, 504 is an example. That's not it's not that complex in the games. It's just the variation of them. And in theory, actually 504 as an idea and as a concept, you kind of think, oh wow, they've got all these kind of variables. Actually, when you start playing them and you start seeing the mechanics of the game, it's not your Zolkin or your what's your game kind of genre of board game. It's actually quite a straightforward game in itself.
So what was your tipping point?
I think it was I couldn't tell you which particular game it was. I think it was watching and going through some of the games online and watching some of these kind of games. I thought, oh, I'm really interested in that, and they'd get halfway through explanations and I'd just kind of switch off and just like went, you know what, I don't care anymore. And that's, if you don't care, then you shouldn't play it. Simple as that.
Yeah. There's definitely that heavyweight end where you need to invest that time. That first play is never any good. You know, it's always learning. You have to invest at least one play, maybe two, to have a chance. And that's a lot of time when we've got so many, you know, we're very fortunate to have so many games to get our hands on. It's a shame to waste it learning something that maybe you're not getting as much out of as you can, or you can get just as much out of straight away from playing something a bit easier.
Is there a game that you actually blame to this, Lewis, or is a few games?
It's a straw that broke the camel. I'm not so sure about the camel back, because then that identifies one particular game. I think it's a kind of just a sensation I've had. You're right. That first play of any heavy game, you kind of get there and you kind of go, Jesus, you know, I kind of need to play that again because I think I know what I was doing wrong, or I don't think I know what I was doing wrong. And I think I've played Zolkin enough, and I think I've played Terra Mystica enough that I've kind of like just stepped back from those games and go, I don't like them. I don't like that kind of game. I like games with a bit more, I don't know, sometimes a bit more luck, sometimes a bit more fun, lightheartedness, a bit more theme, where mechanics isn't the be-all and end-all in the game, where efficiency isn't the be-all and end-all in a game. And those games where you know where you sit down and it's not just your opponents, but you're playing a game, you're playing the game and against perhaps the game, that you kind of, you sit there and you go, why am I doing this again? I don't enjoy this experience. I'm not enjoying this experience. I get beaten at every game I play near enough, and I don't mind it. But if I'm having fun, I don't mind it. You know, if I'm being able to knock you a little bit and I lose by a few points, or, you know, or I win by a few points and it just happened to be luck that did that at the time, it's all the same to me. Be all and end all winning is not there. I have to be enjoying playing the game. And if I'm sitting there kind of going, I don't know what I'm doing, I don't know why I'm doing it either, then... I kind of went, do you know what, those games aren't for me. And also, when you're playing those games, I found that I've wanted to get up halfway through and say, can I stop now? And if you did become that disengaged with the game, people that are playing it and enjoying it, it's not fair for them. So it's like, right.
They don't mind. Most of the time, those kinds of games, it doesn't matter too much. I can remember the first time I met you, Lewis, we managed to rape you into a game of Terra Mystica, Summer Room Meet 2014, I think it was.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
And
I played that passively aggressive.
I also remember last room meet, I don't think you were playing, I think I recall it correctly, that we were playing Zolkin and you just came over my shoulder. You'd arrived, you came over my shoulder and went, this game's making my brain hurt just looking at you playing. And it was making my brain hurt playing it, I'll tell you that. Good, great game though.
I've played it a couple of times. No, not this year. No. I don't think I played it this year. I've played it recently. I know when I first initially played it, we played it, and I think when you're playing with like-minded, when you're playing it lightly, it's quite good fun. But when you're playing with people, when you're playing it with kind of heavy gamers, it becomes not competitive. Just you don't know what you suddenly feel like you're on the back foot all the time, and you're looking at the score markers, you're looking at the god tracks, you're looking at all these kind of variables going, I have no idea what I should be doing, don't know why I'm doing it wrong, and I just become disconnected and just, yeah, like I say, very negative about it.
So what's the like heaviest game that you do like?
I don't know. I mean, you wouldn't take certain worker placement games. Tell me about your mother. When I play, there's certain games that I can play and really enjoy. Take, for instance, I don't know, the Carson Cities of this world, the Francis Drake. Simple worker placement. Yeah. I think the way
Age.
Yeah, exactly. These games where actually there's not many mechanics going on with the game. There's a bit of planning, there's a bit of card management, and then there's some area control, and then you start again kind of thing. That's kind of great. I think when there's a hell of a lot of long-term planning, when there's a strategy to things and there's kind of adaptation of what you're trying to do throughout the game and a bit of foresight needed and everything, that's where I fall over. Foresight in any kind of thing is where I fall over.
What about you, Joe? Where are you on these heavy end games?
So my heavy games, I don't know yet. I'm still trying to work through them. I played Madeira. I got lost halfway through. I got lost in the explanation, and I just didn't really know what I was doing throughout the whole game. And then I thought I knew what I was doing, but then it came to the end game, and I didn't know what I was doing. Nippon, I don't have a problem with. I don't think that's at all heavy. I don't know why. It's quite simple. You pick a dude up to do with the action. You try and match all your dudes to the same color. And you try and build enough of an engine to like steamroll your way to victory. And I mean, like, first couple of games I won, and I came second in our third game, quite far behind Paul, but he just roller coasted off into the lead.
See, Madeira I've played, and I kind of understood what I was trying to do when I was playing that game.
See, the first time I played Madeira, I did often what I do and on the heavier games is you get the rules explanation and then you just grab hold of one element of it and you just do that. And it won't necessarily be the best way of playing the game, but you just hammer that one element. Hold on for dear life for understanding the game through that.
The trouble is I get distracted by shiny things. So if a turn's got a few ages and new stuff comes out in new ages, I go, oh, what's that? And I go after that, and it'll be totally contrary to what I was actually trying to do at the beginning. But it's because it's new and it's shiny, so you know, I get distracted quite easily. So,
yeah, Terra Mystica, like you, Lewis, I can take it or leave it. I'm not too bothered. I don't understand it that well. I try and play it to the best I can, but I never seem to do that well. What else have I played that might be big? Can't think off my head. But yeah, I think I'm in Lewis's camp a lot. It's got to have theme, mostly, a lot of enjoyment to it, and I don't know, quick to play, quick to understand. And I think, as you said, Blood Rage just fills a lot of that, really. And there's still a lot of game in it.
Ticks a lot of boxes, that one, doesn't it? I think
the Grandeur. Have you played the Grandeur, the pair of you?
No.
Yeah, I have.
See, I played that, and I quite like multi-use cards. That kind of does things for me. And we were playing the game, and it was quite a learning game for all of us. But I definitely came away from that saying I don't need to play that again because I know I've had my fill with that game. But I know it's very deep. You know, you can have many strategies to everything within the game, but it's just like, nah, you're good there. There's no theme in that game with regards to the heaviness of that game. They just seem quite mechanical with its style.
Yeah, I think I've talked about La Grandeur on here before, haven't I, Joel?
Well, no, because this is the first episode of the Devon Dice.
Oh, on the Devon Dice.
Come on, sort your life out.
I'm assuming there's going to be some transfer of listeners across from your previous podcast.
Yeah,
welcome,
probably.
All Ministry of Sound listeners. Sorry.
Ministry of Sound. Oh, dear.
That's fantastic if we had those.
I was going to get some dubstep in for the intro music.
You don't have to now. That's it. We're done.
So La Grandeur, my problem with La Grandeur was that I love the idea of having that tense question about how do I use this multi-use card? But the Grandeur boiled down to there was one thing on that card that mattered, and that was the power. And once you decided which of the cards you got you wanted the powers of, you'd then just wait until something came along that gave you pigs or gave you a field of wheat or some grapes or whatever, because the other ones didn't really matter. They were all a much. And then you're just kind of doing a little bit of jiggery-pokery. But it wasn't that true decision about, oh, if I use them in this way, I'm absolutely losing that ability, that kind of that other part of the card. Yes, you were losing the ability, but you weren't never felt as though you were losing out on that other part of the card. And that let it down for me. I mean, it was fun. Otherwise, you had a lot of room to take your turn. To you had lots of ability to get resources during your turn and do quite a few things. But yeah, I felt as though it didn't have enough strategy to be worth playing again. I was the opposite. I felt as though there weren't enough reasons to play it again. Although I would, if somebody really wanted to play it, I would sit down, but I wouldn't hunt out another game. Here's a heavy one you like, Joel. You like Kanban, don't you?
Yes. I don't know why. I get it. I think that's the thing. If you get it, you will enjoy it. It's like some people got Medina straight away and thoroughly enjoy it, but I just didn't get it, so I didn't enjoy it. And like Nippon, I get it. I know how it works. The first game I didn't. I think I stumbled through that, and I think we all stumbled through that on the first one, and it wasn't until the second play I was like, I actually get this. I know what I'm doing, kind of thing. And quite comfortable going into the third game and saying, right, I'm gonna do this and do this. And as you pointed out in the third game, I stuck to the same strategy. And yes, I did, because yes, I'm trying to improve on what I've already know. But next time I probably will try to do something different and see what happens. But I know you are. But yeah, it was one of those. I know this strategy. I'm going to see if I can work. And I had to try and beat Paul. So that was another reason why I was sticking to it. It didn't work, but I nearly did. But he just had accumulated so many points in the end score, and it was ridiculous. So
there's always a good reason. If you've got a chance of beating Paul, then you have to go for it.
Because going back to Kanban, this year there have been two games actually, Lewis, that have done a similar thing to me, as you said at the start of your explanation about how this year's been for you. And I very much started this year saying, right, we're going to play Vinos. We're going to play it again and again and again, because there must, we're going to get to grips with it. We're going to understand it. We're going to have a really good game. There's one of the guys at the club who's particularly good at it, and we were really keen to
beat him,
understand it to the level he does, and give him a good game at it.
Yeah.
And we must have played it 4 weeks in a row, I think. And when it boiled down to it, I just still didn't understand why he was winning. I never really got to grips with it. And, I do play the heavier side of games, but for one reason or another, that one didn't chime with me. And Kanban equally didn't chime with me. I felt both of them had the same issue, in my opinion, which was that there's only ever a couple of little options. There's only so many spaces. I mean, in Vinos, there's 9 spaces, and a few of them are going to be not available for one reason or another. But yet, someone who's good at the game still does better than everyone else. And so I'm not saying it's not a skill game. It's just not for me for some reason, its complexity. And I didn't really get to grips with it.
So there's the other side of the story where, like you said, you played Vinos so many times, try and get to grips with it, and the same guy wins it. So, I don't know, you didn't like the game because of that?
That's not what I said.
Okay, that's...
I didn't like it because he beat me. I'm quite happy for him to beat me.
No, but you just didn't... You're not enjoying the game because you're not getting to grips.
Because of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I wasn't getting to grips.
But then we play Viticulture, and we played that 5-6 times with the same 4 people, and the same guy keeps winning that, but we're still enjoying it because we understand it. And we've just got to try and nail it on the head of how to beat him. And he's just one of these guys who knows a strategy and can pull it off. And we just need to work that out. And technically, I did beat him if we used the new rules, but we weren't using the new rules. So,
I think he does what I was actually ribbing you about in Nippon, where he knows his strategy. He knows it's a very efficient strategy. And, I know Viticulture well enough that I could hit that strategy with him, but I'm always trying to feel around the edges of the game and see whether I can push it somewhere else, see if I can try something else out on it. If I was playing a game the same way each time, it would get quite stale for me.
Well, you actually challenged him about it, didn't you? You said, why do you play it the same all the time? Why don't you try something different? I can't remember his answer now, but... You did challenge him about this, and yeah.
It's fine. It doesn't annoy me. I just use it to rib people about.
So we've got the lows out of the way with. Any highs?
I blinged out a few game boards. I got my treasure tokens from Stonemaier. I got extra tokens for my Francis Drake. I got various kind of bits and pieces for various kind of games, like just add-ons and blinged out a few boards and everything. And so, yes, and I got a gaming room. I haven't finished it or started it yet, but I have a gaming room because I moved house. So that's quite awesome.
It's just written on the door, games room.
I have. You get Connor's room, Lewis's room, and it just says games room.
He's peed up the side of the alcove.
That's what I've done. Claim it. Scent everywhere. Yeah. So, yes, so that's quite awesome.
So I've got two highlights this year, and both of them are along a similar vein. One we've mentioned already, which is viticulture, and we've got that to the table quite a few times. Really enjoyed the base game. I enjoy the process of it, the choices that there are, and it's all work placement across two halves of the year in the base game, and I enjoy what that brings to that work placement game. But the reason why it particularly stands out for me is with the Tuscany expansion and being able to change it up each time we've played, adding in another element of the expansion, bringing in slightly different rules, making it a little bit different each time. Still around the same core, still the same game, but with, I think, enough to give it a different slant and a bit of interest. So I really enjoy playing that over the year. So that's with the Thursday club we play with in Ivybridge. And the similar one is Alhambra. I've got Alhambra big box for my birthday, and I didn't really know what to expect to start with from it as a game. I thought it would be very, very light, and it is a light game, but there was a lot more strategy in there than I thought there would be. As a family with my parents and sister and wife, we've played that more times than any other game over 2015, partly because each time we've played it, we've cracked out another one of the expansions in the big box.
It's always nice to do with Queen games. They do that quite well.
And because of that, I have to tear myself away from the buy button every time I see another big box Queen game.
I did the same. I did that with... oh, crap. What have I done that with?
Fiasco. Fiasco.
No, not Fiasco.
Wasn't it Fiasco?
No, the painting one.
That's Prince, Fiasco. Fresco.
Fresco. Yeah. That was the one I did that with. For exactly the same reason. Mm. You can put bits in and pieces. I had the Alhambra basic and I bought two of the small core add-ons, and I was going through those exactly the same way. And it was great to add in the treasure chests or to add in the warriors or the attackers, whatever it was that you can have come in. And it was great because exactly that. It turned a bog standard kind of card buying tiles kind of thing into actually now we're going to play with this, this and this. So we'll just take that out and put a bit of that in. So I found that really enjoyable as well.
It's given us, I feel like it's probably given us absolute replayability of it because we've been through each of the expansions now, but, you know, there's I don't know how many combinations and iterations of matching different ones. So each time we'll be able to play it slightly differently and I don't feel like I'm going to get bored of the core mechanics of the game because the game itself changes up. You can't kind of math it out. You can just do your best and flex and deal with the situations as the tiles come out, which is another thing that I really like in games. So I've been really pleased with that one. They're my two big highlights for a very similar reason, with two completely different game groups and two completely different games.
I think my highs... this year are not really to do with games, because I was just looking through my list of stuff I played, and I played great games, I played some rubbish games. I mean, one game I did play that I really, really like, and it's a really old game that you can't get, which is Through the Desert.
Mark this down, take a drink whenever he mentions that game.
Well, it was my friend, I saw it on my friend's shelf when I was at his house, and he said, show you other games. So I played it, and me and the missus loved it, but it was like, it's out of print, it's like 100 quid on Amazon. I'm not picking that up for that. I've not made them money. And then I went to UK Games Expo and it was in the bring and buy, so I picked up for that, and it's got some of the most plays of any game I played last year.
You whipped that out.
And then UK Games Expo, leading on from that, that I had a brilliant time with that this last year. Mainly so playing Riff Raff for you and your kids. That was hilarious fun. And you went off and brought that straight away. But then meeting lots of people, playing lots of games. That was a great weekend, along with weekends like Room Meet. Another one, we'd done the meet. Oh, you came to that, didn't you? Meeple's Corner on the Saturday. And that day I played nothing but new games that didn't belong to me, which was a change. I'm usually sitting down playing my own games. It was like, no, I'm just going to play this game and this game. And there were all other people's games, and they were brilliant.
That was that kind of an Essen day, wasn't it? There was quite a few that had just come over.
Yeah, post-Essen kind of thing, and yeah, a lot of Essen games. Yeah.
It was nice to play, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I do feel like last year was, for me personally, it was quite an important year in terms of how I feel in the game group. It's always been a very welcoming game group, and I've been lucky to have been invited along to additional sessions to various events and things. But last year felt as though I was really a part of it all, you know, kind of in with the group. And I think this year I'd like to make sure that I spend as much time with new people who come into the club going forward and help them to get to that same position as I've been lucky enough to get into last year. But it's been good. It was a good year for the club, I think.
Well, we had that change, didn't we? Because it's last year the shop decided he weren't going to host any more board game nights, so all us Tuesday lot like community was left hanging without anywhere to go. Paul Grogan stepped up and sorted out a venue at first, and then it's evolved to this. But then on the other side of that, our Thursday night group that was only like fortnightly has now turned to weekly, because the other two guys, Dr. Lewis and Mike, they're just really good guys to play games with. So we thought, well, why don't we do weekly here? And me, Tom and them have all introduced each other to some great games, I think. Village for a start, great game. Viticulture. What else we played? Key Flower.
Oh, well, there's been all the bidding ones that Biblios and Medici and all those that Mike brought along.
And yeah, they're just a couple of great guys. It's only the four of us that sit in a pub one evening and just play these games and have fun. And we've got to that comfortable level where we mock each other now and just take the mick.
It takes me about 15 minutes normally. I don't know why it takes you so long.
It does, doesn't it?
It takes you 15 minutes, Lewis.
Because I'm automatically on the offensive because I know it's going to start on me any minute. It's like a preemptive strike.
Yeah, but you're a person that can talk to anyone. It's like, I know how this person works.
Oh, who started on the Scotch already?
It's probably Tom.
All I'm asking for is $1 million so I can run away, retire in Mexico, and never make an album.
Wait, sorry, wrong course.
$4,000 is really all I need in order to record a super fun album. It will include funny songs.
Let's move on to Kickstarter. Lewis, have you got your mats through yet?
If you no, I'm not mentioning mats. Move on. No, I haven't got my mats through. What is it, January? We're on January. It is good. 2016. It is only the 4th.
So the story goes, if you don't follow on from Ministry of Board Games podcast, me and Lewis bid on some Kickstarter tabletop gaming mats. These very large neoprene mats that you can chuck on a table and the pieces don't move around, and you can have any image you like print on it practically. When did we back this?
When would you like to... we backed it. The estimated delivery for the $1 rewards was January 2014. So I would assume that that means that it closed on January the 14th. January 2014. So 2 years ago.
And we've still not got them.
Oh, wow. 2 years ago.
Yes. Yeah. The poor guy. I mean, I give him his cred, and that's why we're not that pissed off with him. He's been through some real ordeals.
The fact that he's still doing it is quite impressive.
Yes, and he still keeps in contact.
He could quite easily have kind of thrown in the towel and gone, you know, done.
Yeah, and you can message him and say, how's it going, and things like that. And he'll get back to you and say, it's at this stage, or look back at my last update.
If you want your money back, he'll give you money back.
Yeah, he's always up front. He says you can have a refund at any point. I mean, some people have had their mats because he's like printed off certain ones and they've received them. I think he's done all the space ones. I don't know. Am I right with that? It seems like he's...
I don't know what sizes it was that he managed to get through.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So is this something that I could go to my local printer and just print on a mouse mat?
No. Okay, so the mat itself and the image, yes. What's different about this dude is the mat he's using lies flat quite quickly, which is one of the perks while I was looking at it. But secondly, the coating that's on top, the things don't move around. Whether that's any different to any other mat out there that comes with a game, so the Machikuru kind of game mat or the legendary mats that you get with that card game, I have no idea because I haven't got one to compare it with because I haven't got my mats yet.
Well, the other thing there's a couple of things, was that the size of them. I mean, the standard mats you can get are like the players' mats you get for card games. They're not that big, but these you can have practically in any size to cover a whole table.
My dining table will be covered in one. That's the idea was I measured my table and the mat he had covered that table, and that's why I got it.
And that's the other thing I was thinking it for. And the other thing is basically they said you could scrunch it up and put it in your bag and then be in there for weeks or months, get it back out again, and it will just lay flat, where others will take on the folds, and it's really difficult to get the folds back out of them again.
I had Cubes Quest, which was a mat kind of thing where you put cubes on, and once you took that out of the box, that was it. We used it as terrain, basically, because it was never going flat.
No.
And, yeah, that was that. And these would go flat.
Well, the mine's the same, yeah. I've had to... I've rolled them up and put them down the side of the cupboard to see if the creases will ever come out, but I doubt it.
That was the story of the mats, and yes, two years low waiting. The last update was to say that they were on their way to the printers for final processing, and that was in the beginning of December. Mid to late December. And then they've got to ship from there to wherever it is in Europe and then to us. So I think I might get them for my birthday in February and maybe March. Probably March.
I might get them for my birthday then. But so yes, that's one Kickstarter.
For those of you listening who don't know, I'm not big on Kickstarter. I've never backed.
So you can sit there sniggering and mocking.
Exactly, when it all goes wrong. And when it goes right, I get to play all the games.
Exactly.
But there are two things I can talk about on Kickstarter. One is I'm disappointed that none of you backed Conan.
No.
Yeah, but Paul Grogan's getting a copy of that, so.
Right, so that's fine. Okay, fine. Thanks, Paul. Look forward to playing it with you. Look forward to playing it with you, buddy. Two is big year for Kickstarter, because in America there was the first lawsuit brought against someone who didn't fulfill what they said they would fulfill, which is quite a big step. Some would say inevitably, but not necessarily. And so that's quite a big step for Kickstarter to now people can, maybe they can feel like there's a little bit of a safety net. Still quite expensive to go through.
Americans can, because that's where
obviously laws are different from in the UK here to in the USA, but I'd imagine similar protections exist, although I'm not a lawyer.
Because where the client is based, if I'm an American and I launch it in America with all those kind of situations and where it's, you know, where you're buying the goods from, I don't know how much of a leg you have to stand on when you're over here. And the amount of effort involved in perhaps pursuing a $30 to $50 refund and effort involved in doing that, you know, I don't know. It's always been good. And I think if people should be held more accountable on Kickstarter or any crowdfunding, to be honest.
There was also another thing that happened with Kickstarter. They changed from an LLC to a new organization. I'm trying to find it now. Basically, it sounds like the United States have introduced this new thing for like Kickstarter and Indiegogo, where you're a project funding website, and so you come under different conditions compared to a standard company. I'm just trying to find it now because I got an email about it saying, "Oh, now we're this," and I was like, "Oh, that's interesting."
Is it a registration thing like gambling casinos in America? You know, there's laws against that, aren't there?
So yeah, Kickstarter, I found the bit about it now. It's gone from Inc., Kickstarter Inc. or Incorporation, to a PBC, Public Benefit Corporation. So I would just like to say here as a side note, me and Tom do not know what we're really talking about. We're just making assumptions on what this actually entitles. I have tried to look it up just now and I still have no idea what it is and why, but hey, we'll make it a podcast, so back to them.
They've obviously reorientated the ability for a company to be both profit making and positive impacts on society. That's the core of it. So it's no longer effectively charity or profit. Don't know what the driver was behind creating the additional category.
I don't know. American government has said, oh, we need a different one for these sort of things now popping up because they're coming across sort of problems now being listed as an Inc., where an Inc. is a company for profit.
Maybe. But then is it a tax thing?
Maybe.
Newly committed to donate 5% of annual post-tax profits to arts education and organisations fighting inequality.
Maybe there's a loophole somewhere where they weren't having to pay so much tax, and because they come under something, I don't know. It's a different setup in America a little bit, isn't it?
Maybe. I have no idea. Outside of my knowledge sphere.
So yeah, I just thought when it came up and I was like, oh, that's interesting, now they've gone to this. Yeah, maybe too many things have bit them on the arse, or bit American on the arse.
Maybe.
Yeah, and they say we've got to sort these out.
Difficult to say. And with any, you know, press release, which is effectively what that blog is, they're always going to spin it in a way that sounds that it's really positive, whether it is or not. I'm not saying it's not.
Uh-huh.
I can go with my Kickstarter year. My Kickstarter year wasn't too bad at all with regards to some of the stuff, because I think I've had quite a bit of it turn up. I was a lot more, I suppose, reluctant on Kickstarter this year. I think I'd been bitten by the mats a year earlier. I'd gone through some of them and just thought to myself, okay, we'll try and be more controlled and everything. And when you look back, you kind of go, actually, I wasn't. But then I've seen some people that back two or three projects a month, you know, minimum. And I just think to myself, I couldn't. You know, there's too much at stake with regards to finances there. I'd rather have, there's a certain amount of buyer's guilt whenever I buy anything, and having it sitting in limbo for 6 months to a year before you actually get it is 6 months worth of buyer's guilt. But I think a lot of my stuff that I got turned up, I was very happy with. My Carson City Deluxe box that I had turned up, very happy with. My treasure packs that turned up, very happy with. The resource kits that I got for Francis Drake, Tiny Epic Galaxies, very happy with all of those. And Bomb Squad, which only just turned up.
Sorry.
Yeah, go on, snigger away, snigger away. And that turned up. I'm happy with that as well. I mean, it doesn't fit on the smaller size things. And they had a little note on their Kickstarter page, which is, let us know your address if it doesn't fit, and we'll sort it out as soon as it comes through. And I emailed him, and he says, right, no problem. I've added you to the system. When it comes in, I'll send it off to you. So I was quite happy with that. I thought that was quite good. That's Testimonials for Games, I think. Compounded, my Geiger expansion came through, which I've yet to play. And at the beginning of the year, or the end of last year, I think it was Evolution. So looking through them, yeah, I'm happy with all of those. I've only got a couple more to go from the ones I backed from last year. But yeah, it's all good. And Tabletopia, which we'll probably come to a bit later on. Yeah, you're happy with all of mine.
So how's your Kickstarters going then, Tom?
Well, great. I didn't
tumble,
get
tumbleweed.
One.
Because you hate backing ideas and concepts and giving artists kind of scope to, you know, get their ideas out there. You just suppress that, don't you?
I think the struggle I have with it is that I've only started looking more recently. Most of the stuff I look at, that's not a game I would buy. there's so many published games that I know the quality of and I know the rules of, or I can read the rules much more easily, or when they do publish rules on Kickstarter, I'm reading the rules and I'm thinking, I don't know where the game is in here. You know, yeah, there are some kind of quite obviously good Kickstarters, but most of those, they end up coming out anyway. And, you know, so maybe I've lost out on a couple of bonuses and Kickstarter exclusives and things. But for me personally, that's worth missing out on at the moment. See, I put that in there at the moment. I'll never say no, definitely never. But, you know, it's worth missing out on to ensure that I don't get stung and ensure that I don't end up with a game I don't really want.
I think what I've learned this year is it seems to be absolutely no reason now to back a lot of Kickstarter stuff because it will be released. There was a time a few years ago that we used to look at Kickstarter and I'd be like, is it going to make it to the shelves? No, it's not. And then there'll also be the other thing, there's a lot of exclusives to it that you're not going to get if you buy the retail. So that was a big draw. Now I'm finding that I'm receiving games on Kickstarter and maybe a week or two before, or same day, week or two afterwards, they're being released on the retail shelves, probably for the same price or cheaper. And I'm kind of saying, was it worth it? I could buy it now. And at some instances, I thought, why did I back this? And it's come out on retail, and I'm like, I'm not really bothered about the game anymore.
Getting caught up in the hype.
You do get caught up in the hype, yes, and I admit that. And say for this year, I backed a few expansions. Heroes Wanted expansion. I liked the game at the time. By the time I got it, it wasn't getting played, and it was also released in the shops at the same time as me receiving the Kickstarter for £5 cheaper. And I'm not gaining much more from this than I am in the retail version, because there's a lot of promo cards in it, but you don't get to play with all the cards in one game because it's all a random setup, or you choose your setup and that's it. The rest of the cards are chucked away. So there's that element. Do you benefit from these exclusives if you're not using them every game? I kind of say not really. I kind of was gutted that I missed out on the Blood Rage Kickstarter, and that's only because I got burnt by receiving a game previously from Cool Mini or not. And when I played it and I thought, don't like it, it's a bit long, bit rubbish, got rid of it. Blood Rage came out and I thought, no, I'm not backing another game from you lot. And I just kind of regretted it in a way, because I'm still waiting for my late pledge to come through of all the goodies to add into it. And most of that will get added into the main game when you play it, if you want to.
But are you getting all the Kickstarter exclusives by... Yeah. So you effectively did a late pre-order. So you missed the Kickstarter, stuck it in anyway to get the Kickstarter exclusives, and waiting as a result. I mean, I think that's... Okay. I mean, you know, you say about, is it worth some of the Kickstarter exclusives? And that's a similar question for me, is the game worth it? Ultimately, you've got to have a look at the Kickstarter rewards that have been offered, and do they look like they're actually something, you know, is it just prettying up the game? Prettying up a game that you would want to pretty up? Or is it adding additional content that's going to benefit replayability, gameplay, quality? I mean, Blood Rage, for example, they've got additional monsters, haven't they?
Yeah.
To add into the deck and things like that.
They've got additional monsters, and then they've got all the expansions that they've released now anyway, but there's lots of exclusive stuff, extra monsters, as you said, and extra token pieces that work throughout the game. Instead of using cardboard chits, you get lots of token bits and things like that. So
one of the turning points, one of the eye-openers, was the Space Cadets Away missions campaign that Stronghold Games did halfway through the year. And it just highlighted a hell of a lot of the, let's just say, BS that goes on behind the scenes with drumming up kind of exclusivity and opportunities for levels within Kickstarter. And what was really interesting throughout that entire campaign was I've never seen a campaign drop money.
Yeah.
They actually lost, in the middle of the compact campaign for 2 weeks, the bottom was falling out of the campaign, of the money. They were actually losing money. They were adding... tiers to say, okay, we'll paint the minis and we'll do this and we'll do that if you increase your level by X amount. And so people were upping their levels to get the painted figures or to get this, that, and the other added on. And still the funding was going down as people were backing out. Because they were looking at this campaign going, hang on a second, you have stated that it's a five-player game on the box, which you've now six. Changed your art, but six-player, sorry, changed, because on the box artwork, on the actual main screen, it had that number. Yeah. Then someone pointed out that actually you're selling it as a four-player game with these being add-ons if we raise enough money. Well, hang on a second, the box says it has six players. There are creatures in it that require really these things to be in there, and it looks like from what we were seeing within the game that these creatures need to be in the game, yet you're saying they are a stretch goal. And it was like, something smells here, you know. Something's not right with the way in which this is playing out. Not that I'm saying he was deceitful, but let's just say he wasn't being as open as he should, and he should have said, this is what you're going to get, and if you back it and we get to this much money, then you will acquire painted figures or whatever he could have done. But it just seemed, and a lot of people were, I think, seeing the same as what I was saying. But what was also quite interesting was, try and say a bad word against that company and you will be drowned out with positivity, wrong or rightly or wrongly, within the campaign. So if anyone was looking at the thread of comments, you would be drowned out. Literally, the sea of comments would come in saying how wonderful the campaign was for every negative that would appear, to kind of like just literally push it down the feed. And it was just quite interesting to see.
But, I mean, Stronghold Games is the company, and the guy is he's a brilliant, I don't know, advocate of the gaming industry. He brings out all his games just straight out into the retail. He's never bothered with Kickstarter. It's never been his mainframe. I think with this game that he had, someone gave him the concept to this game. He then said, "Oh, I'm going to turn it to the Space Cadets franchise, put it in that." And then possibly someone was speaking in his ear and saying, "Well, if you put minis in this and put it on Kickstarter, you're going to earn a ton of money."
Minis, yeah, it seems,
because that's what happens when you have a miniature game on Kickstarter. It just rockets out the roof, and I think that's what it's okay, we'll give it a try and we'll see what happens. And I think the problem was that the game core box was going to come with just tokens, standees, cardboard tokens for the monsters and things like that. The minis was a separate thing that was what was needed to fund, that needed the help from Kickstarter to help pay for it. Because miniatures take a lot to make and produce and things like that, so that's understandable. I think the way he done it was like, okay, so here's the standard setup. This is what you're going to get when you back it. You're going to get the core box and you're going to get some minis. But we're only going to give you four minis for the characters. But there's six characters in the game. So the other two, if you're playing a six-player game, you'll have to use the standees. Now, to me, that sounds like it's not a finished game per se,
shelf,
if I was buying
you?
That on, the shelf. Because it's like, yeah. Well, no, it's like, well, where's the other two minis? You're either going to give me the minis or not. And I think that's where downfall is, like, oh, well, we can have the other two minis as stretch goals to bring on the hype and get the people to keep backing it. And then when people started pulling it apart and saying, oh, well, you've done this, you've done that. Well, this doesn't make sense. Well, okay. Well, I'm not backing this. I'm pulling out. And as soon as some people start talking like that, yeah, it doesn't work for the campaign.
Well, I mean, I don't know that specific campaign at all, but I do know that Stronghold have pumped out some brilliant games over the year.
Indeed. I'm not criticising the company. I'm just criticising what I'm saying is the campaign, not so much opened my eyes, like I'm totally naive to these things, but the campaign kind of opened my eyes to, okay, you can see how this is being put together. It was almost laid out for you. You could see they've done this as a first tier to kind of get everyone in, and they're kind of teasing everyone up with the this, that, and the other.
But the whole system is set up to feed that, though, isn't it? Because these companies are getting their money so quickly now through Kickstarter for board games, especially the minis ones. You've got to be ready with what you've got to be ready for how your campaign is going to react to hitting those different goals and where it's going to go. It sounds like the failure in this instance was that he was relying too much on getting to those points and the expectation of getting to those points, rather than having a product and then saying, here are my further stretch points, which will give you other stuff, you know, in true
I just think if you looked at Mars Attacks as a minis game and Conan and there was the Ghostbusters and there was a few others that were happening at the time, they were just raking in, you know, money. And you're kind of thinking, why isn't this up there? It didn't make any sense as to why it wasn't. And maybe it was the theme and you know, maybe it just didn't tick a number of people's, you know, boxes with regards to the way the game was played. I don't know. But I'm not knocking Stonemaier. I'm not knocking Stronghold. What I'm saying is if you look at the Stonemaier campaign, it's fairly straightforward. There's normally 3-4 tiers. This is what you're going to get. And then as it goes on, it's like, well, OK, if you've backed at this tier, we're going to add this, we're going to add that. But only if we get to that. But the tiers stay the same. A confusing tier ratio in backing is a downfall for some campaigns because you don't know what you're getting yourself into. And I've seen a number of those. And I think that's starting to get clearer with people that set up Kickstarter campaigns. Right. They're not doing those multitude, this, that, and the other. Although, if you look at the Dice Tower's latest one for 2016, that's just a minefield.
They're all learning.
They are. But it's taken far too long for that to happen.
Well, I think there was probably a lot of chatter to him saying, you've got to do this. You're going to raise a million. You have these as stretch goals. You're going to do this. It's going to do well. And his first one, he just didn't set out well, I don't think. It wasn't possibly planned for the Kickstarter structure. And when it's your first one, it should be simple enough to go in and say, well, this is what you're going to get. And this is how it is. But when you make little mistakes that he was making throughout the campaign, like only getting 4 minis for the characters and the other 2 are standees, that doesn't work for people. There was also another issue in the video that was made for the front cover of the Kickstarter, where there was minis, like digital rendered minis, used for some of the monsters. But you would only get those digital rendered minis once you unlocked a certain stretch goal that was quite high. And I said, that doesn't work for me either, because I'm looking at this video thinking, oh yeah, if I support this, I should be getting what's shown in the video. But you're not. You've got to hopefully break through that stretch goal to get it all. And in the end, he had to manipulate all the stretch goals so everyone was going to get practically everything that was laid out in front of him. Like, he reduced all the extra characters down to like a couple of grand within each other, and then that monster, like I said, was reduced back down to that they unlocked it just so he could keep all his customers and backers happy and say, yeah, you're gonna get it all.
Well, he at that point he probably did the right thing, you know. He got it wrong. You know, we've slated him for quite a while now.
I apologize.
Probably singling him out unfairly, but it doesn't sound as though it went well. He got it wrong to start with. It was set up in a way. I'm sure he's learned his lesson, and it sounds as though in the end he actually responded well to it, and hopefully kept a lot of people's respect by doing that. And maybe if he goes into the Kickstarter realm again, hopefully he learns his lesson. And if he doesn't, well,
I don't think he will. I think he's actually stated he says not doing Kickstarter anymore. That's it.
Oh, there you go. Well, that's fine. I think that's a really respectable decision for him to take.
The reason I raise this as a point was simply because it kind of opened your eyes up to some of the way in which a Kickstarter is crafted behind the scenes to kind of lure you in. And it stopped me, actually, like we were talking about at the beginning of this, which is the reason why I mentioned it, it stopped me from backing a number, because it's like, do I need to? Because I'm probably going to get this at what I'm going to get anyway at the end of it. Like Joel was saying, so I'd rather not have that extra card, possibly buy it from BGG, you know, next month anyway, and at least I'll get the game when I want to, rather than, you know.
I mean, there was another game that came out same time that failed and was poorly run as well. That was Cones of Dunshire, and that was basically ripping off of a made-up game that was in a TV show in the States. Some guy just kind of made up this game randomly in the show, and then Mayfair Games decided, oh, we're going to take this game and we're going to make it. It failed quite poorly. One reason, they were asking for £500 for this game to buy a copy, and they needed something ridiculous like our funding goal of, oh yeah, $300,000, which I don't see how you're going to get that with just a board game. I mean, there has been some, but they've been well-established companies and have lots of miniatures in. So that failed. They re-relaunched it with different goals and different rewards, and it still failed again. So
Again, I'd almost rather that. I mean, failures in Kickstarters is an inevitability with the model,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think that in itself is a bad thing. I'd actually much rather that they set realistic costs and realistic goals than, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sure. I'm going to put a ridiculous, you know, whatever percentage I put on, 80% of Kickstarters that go up, if they only just meet their funding goal for board games, if they only just meet their funding goal, they won't be able to provide what they've said they'll be able to provide. They put that on there to reach it, and they know from day one that they're going to have to smash their goal to be able to actually deliver that product. So I'd actually rather somebody went down the Cones of Dunshire route, said, this is going to cost me this much. If I don't reach it, I can't deliver it. That's what Kickstarter, that's what the model is set up there to do.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't have a game that brought enough money. Fine. They haven't done anyone out of any, you know, they haven't sold anyone up the river or anything like that. I say fair shame, you know, shame yeah. they didn't make it. Who knows if it was a good game.
I mean, comparing stats, actually, last year I only backed 4 games on Kickstarter compared to the year before where I backed 11. I backed a few expansions on top of that, but then I backed other interesting stuff, say Unicorn Poo, which has made it into a couple of games, and all it is finely crafted plasticine of poo type, colourful poo type, as game components.
Yeah, it's shaped in a little curly poo, isn't it? But it's rainbow coloured.
Yeah, with eyes and the smiley face. It's quite good. They're quite funny. And you add them into a game of La Grandeur, and it really ups the game's experience. Don't you agree?
Did, yeah. No, it really set it on fire.
I brought some metal coins. That was quite interesting. Legendary metal coins. Not really used them yet, but they're quite cool to have.
They make a big difference having a decent set of coins in a game.
Yeah, yeah. And I've always wanted this set, and this set came out. And with this one, it wasn't just one standard set. They had, I don't know, 10, 13 different sets of all different genres. And like, I picked up a pirate set and a dwarf set of coins. And so you get in 3 different denominations. But then they had all sort of stuff. Chinese, like oriental kind of styled, cowboy stuff, orc coins, all stuff, and they were really good. It's quite good value for what you were getting. And that few t-shirts I backed that were actually board gaming t-shirts, one I still got to receive, but I've got 3 lots through, and they're pretty good, quite good, good quality. And then we said Tabletopia, but we'll come to that later. So let's go on to the elephant in the room and talk about the big one that happened this year.
Scythe.
Okay. All right. So Scythe was launched in October, and I knew it was going to do well. I've been following his journey on first coming up with the idea to its actual evolution on Kickstarter, and it just hit the ground running. Within seconds of it launching, it raised nearly $40,000, quite literally. In 24 hours, it reached nearly $600,000 in funding, and was still climbing at a steady pace.
Well, this one absolutely knocked it out of the park, didn't it? It had everything. It had built up the hype pre-setting up their Kickstarter campaign. He got a really great theme with the artwork. Read his blogs about his design. He found these pictures from a artist and said, I want to design a game around those pictures. And, you know, and people were excited, and quite understandably, you look at the pictures, they're gorgeous. They set a lovely setting and theme. Is it Russia?
Well, East Russia European, isn't it?
Sorry. Apologies to all our Eastern European friends. Obviously quite separate from Russia in some places. It's an alternate universe where there's a lot of agriculture during the Industrial Revolution going on. But you're also, there's a high mechanical walkers and armaments going around mechs that obviously are trying to defend it. So you get this big juxtaposition of that history and this alternate reality. So very cool idea, great artwork. He was on to a winner and he wrote, you know, he did all the right things. Plus he comes with a really strong background in games. You know, he is knocked out, it's Stomo. Is it two
of them. But Alan, who's his co-worker, he doesn't really have much to do with it. I think he's kind of the accountant or something of it. And then helps with playtesting. But
they've knocked out some great games. You know, but what we got, Viticulture.
Yeah. He made three games.
Euphoria,
and Between Two Cities.
Was that his, is it?
That is his. Well, he didn't make it. He's published it, but he had a lot of, say in it. But it's still under his title.
This one's going to be intriguing to see what the actual gameplay is like once it comes out.
Yeah.
I want it to be good. I want it to do so well.
I want it to be good. I spent a lot of money on it.
I just want to play it and love it.
Yeah.
Do you know what my biggest worry is, Joel?
Yeah.
Blood Rage.
What about it?
Because I wonder whether Scythe has just come a few months too late and it's very... Is it? Don't know. Find out. Is it very similar in gameplay?
No.
Is it still really area control with a bit of war? I mean, they're obviously very different themes. They're going to have completely different rule sets, really. But are they scratching the same itch from a area control conflict point of view? And which one, if they are, which one's going to do that in a slightly more streamlined way? And the reason I'm worried is that Blood Rage is just the peak of that type of game. They really nailed that one, which obviously is the other... it's another Kickstarter bit of news there, isn't it? Blood Rage did such a fantastic game to come out of Kickstarter. But fingers crossed, I want Scythe to be brilliant. I want it to be a slightly different game, or a lot different. Fine. I want it to be brilliant. I really hope it is. But I've just got this niggling feeling in the back of my mind.
Do you know what I've got there ever since I paid the money for it now? And Mum's just like, I do hope you are as good as it's displayed to. I mean, we can play it. We can go on Tabletopia and play it. But then there's also the other half of it that doesn't want to. Because if we play it and it's like, it's not that good, is it? Then I still know I've got it coming to me. But if we hold off and just say, let's just wait for it, play it, and then experience it as it's meant to be with the components, with the cards in your hand and the smell of board game amongst the pub smell, maybe it'd be better. And that's what I don't want to play on Tabletopia, because I want to have that kind of aesthetic kind of feel, instead of just clicking a mouse around the screen and playing it like that.
Yeah, and the miniatures. Mm.
But have been tempted. I've looked on Tabletopia, and
I think it's very wise, Joel. I think it's a very wise decision. Well, let's see. When's it due?
August.
Oh, it's a bit of a wait, isn't it? I mean, this is the other. I think
it's going to be here sooner, because he's pretty good at extending the delivery dates to make sure it all fits in, just in case something happens. But it could still happen, and we still get it on time or later. But if everything goes sweetly and to plan, nothing gets held up, I reckon we might have it by June, July time. So
exciting times, everyone.
Yeah,
looking forward to that.
I did pick up And Then We Held Hands, which I'll go on about this because, which is a game I spoke about in the previous podcast series we did. and it was featured in the end of year show for last year, where I said, oh yeah, did you notice this come up in the hotness of Board Game Geek? And it's basically called And Then We Held Hands, and it's a two-player game of you're trying to sort out your differences between each other as a couple that's fallen out of love, and trying to work out your emotions by moving this node or this component around this circular board to different nodes and then meet in the center together. So it came out on Kickstarter, and I thought, yeah, I've championed this game. I'm going to back it. It was cheap, really cheap to get, and got it within a month because I think they had the print run already going. So that's another kind of like thing from Kickstarter, is like, so they just released this as a pre-order, definitely. And to the fact that it was actually doing so well on Kickstarter, they said, oh, we're going to have to shut this pledge down and open a new one. So, and the people that now get into this new pledge, same price, no difference, except for they're going to receive it round about now, where I received mine back in November. There was that whole thing, okay, it's kind of good that I've jumped on early and I'm getting it before everyone, but they've already got it printed, so they must have paid for it already. So they're just now taking pre-orders, and that's a deliberate thing that just come about. It's a deliberate pre-order.
Yeah.
And I don't really like that on Kickstarter. But I didn't know whether I was going to be able to pick this up in retail because their games are not sold very well in the UK.
I think Kickstarter's a tool. It's a website that is a portal for people to upload their stuff, and ultimately they say what they're going to give you, you spend some money. I don't mind people using it as a pre-order system. I'd rather it was clear when it's a pre-order, when they're going to be delivering it as a pre-order system, and when they need the money up front to spend some time delivering, you know, additional artwork or sending, you know, making sure they've got the money to send it to printers or any of those things. But at its heart, I don't really mind it being a pre-order system. They're just using it as a tool to get their pre-orders in a way that they can get it out there. Everybody knows, well, many people in the board game world know what Kickstarter mm-hmm. is and what it's about. They know how to use it. Fine. So you've got it, have you? And Then We Held Hands. Is it good?
Yeah, I got it. Played it. Don't like it.
How much do you want for it? Lend it for me indefinitely.
I can lend it to you if you want to try it out.
Hello, hello, anybody out there? Because I don't hear a sound. Alone, alone, I don't really know where the world...
We have seemed to have lost Lewis in the communication, so we will continue on and see if he comes back in, but there's no sign of that happening at the minute. And we'll proceed. We're going to do news clip-its from throughout the year. Let's start. So, Settlers of Catan changes its name to Catan.
Ooh.
So they felt the need that after all these years of being called Settlers of Catan, that they're just going to streamline it and just call it a straightforward Catan, which kind of makes sense to me because that's what I call it. I don't really do the same whole thing, but there was an argument.
You call it Settlers?
No, I call it Catan. But there is the other argument that a lot of people call it Settlers for short, and they wished it was called that, but I think Catan suits it more. The fight begin.
I did hear that one of the reasons is because Catan is the same in every language.
Right, yeah.
Whereas Settlers is obviously different in different languages. So by calling it Catan...
Well, that makes sense.
Language neutral.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And it's a made-up name in many senses, isn't it? So if it's said in Japan or anything like that, they're going to say Catan. And everyone's going to know what they mean. So, yeah, it makes sense.
I've only played the base game. I haven't played any of the additional expansions.
Neither have I. Neither have I. Played the base game so many times and got sick of it. But, yeah, I've never really...
Maybe we should try them sometime.
No, it's fine.
Okay.
Catan then gets a movie apparently someone's brought the rights to make a movie of Settlers of Catan.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah, nothing's fleshed out really. Someone's just brought the rights from Hasbro. Because
there's a lot of storyline in the board game. So they've got a lot of story arc to build their film upon. It'd be interesting to see how they pack all the story that's already in the game into a single film.
Well, they've got to have the joke in there as well of, can I have wood for sheep? Or sheep for wood, whatever way around it is. But I was playing Tropico 5 on Steam, and they had the old Catan joke in that as well, which was quite funny. So it gets around that joke. But anyway, merger of the month in March was Greater Than Games merging with Dice Hate Me Games. This was kind of out of the blue in many sense, but then it's kind of meant sense because Greater Than Games do all the distribution for Dice Hate Me Games. So that kind of worked in favour of both of them. And they're going strong, I think. Terry Pratchett passes away. Bless his soul.
Dead.
I'm cutting out.
He is.
But in the... Yeah, it's sad, it was inevitable.
Do you know what? There are people who, every year, it's their Christmas is to sit down and read his book. And they won't be able to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. That's a shame. Yeah. He brought a lot of good stories to a lot of people.
And the other sad news that went with that company lost the rights to use his games. Tree Frog Games lost the rights to produce his games now. They had the great one of Ankh-Morpork, which is a favourite of my wife's, and then Witches, which is okay, it's very basic. But there was also a third game planned to come out in this series, and that doesn't seem like that's going to happen now. Because of his passing, the rights went back to the trustees now of his novels. So that was pretty sad. We might not see a reprint of Ankh-Morpork soon, but we'll see. On to big things. Pandemic Legacy in March, this is 6 months before release, 5 months before release, already had 52,000 pre-orders.
That's a lot of games.
That is a lot of games. I hate to think what the pre-order was when it actually got to release date. For the time, that's a lot of games. Dice Tower Awards were announced. This is one I pick up because I quite like the Dice Tower Rewards. I think they represent the majority views of most games in the industry, where the rest is on a very obscure voting system or it's backstage note passing maybe. But I feel these are the best to represent things. So Game of the Year was Dead of Winter.
Whose Game of the Year?
Dead of Winter.
Whose Game of the Year was it?
Oh, Dice Tower.
Oh, okay. Was it?
Yeah.
What, Tom's?
Well, no, not Tom's.
The People's Choice.
The Dice Tower Award for the whole, like, he gets a load of people together, like, he knows that are all in the industry and everything like that, and puts them in a room and says, right, vote for your best game of 2014, this is.
Oh, 2014. Oh,
yeah,
right,
but okay. It gets released in
June.
This
is current news, everyone.
It gets released in June. Because they want to make sure you get to play all the games released in 2014. Sure. So they get a better representation. So Dead of Winter wins Game of the Year, Best Co-op, and Best Board Game. No, it doesn't. That's me. Wrong one. Best Game Theming.
It's a good game.
With your one play.
I've played it twice.
Have you?
Yeah.
I think it's a brilliant game, and I'm quite glad it won. Tuscany for the Viticulture. One Best Board Game Expansion.
Quite rightly.
It's bloody good, isn't it? Best Party Game was Spyfall, which is not bad.
Yeah, I can see that. I don't know how it would go down in some of the parties I go to.
No. But we're talking about a group of gamers that do it all the time, so...
Sure.
Good. It's not like Best Family Party Game. It's
really
just...
innovative, Spyfall. Having a bunch of cards and a location... You know, most of the cards are the location you're in.
Mm.
Antarctica or whatever. and then one of them's a spy, and you're asking questions, trying to work out who's a spy. That's innovative.
Yeah. So that was the awards.
Is that all of them?
Not all of them. Best game components go to Star Wars Imperial Assault. Best family game went to Splendor.
Yep, I like Splendor.
Best game artwork, and I don't think anyone can argue against this one, is Abyss.
Oh, see, I knew Abyss won something. That's a good game, though, as well.
I haven't played it yet.
Not just artwork. Have you never played it?
No, I want to.
It's quite interesting. It's quite light, actually. It looks like it should be really heavy, given the artwork and the kind of the depth of the board and the components and things. But it's a bit of a pushy luck as well. You like pushy luck.
Yeah, I know it's got all that.
It's got some
yeah.
really interesting things going on.
Best game reprint, Ticket to Ride, 10th Anniversary Edition. Best new designer was Alchemist's Mattis Kerry. I'm trying to read it with a blown up thing because I've not listed him. We just put Alchemist's. Oh, Mattis Tortney, the designer is. Best strategy game went to Five Tribes.
Great, good game.
Yeah, I don't know good if it was game. The best strategy game of 2014.
I suppose it depends what your definition of strategy is. Funnily, it does have some strategy, mm-hmm. so far as strategy as opposed to tactics, but mostly it's tactics, I'd say. But it's a good game.
News. So July, we had the winners of the Spiel des Jahres. The two nominees was Machikuru and The Game, but the winner was Cult Express, which I think was the best one out of them. Really, maybe for theme and gameplay. I mean, we played Machikuro, didn't we, as a four player? We kind of all seemed to be dying inside when we were playing it. I don't know if it was, I don't know, us. I've played it a few times and I just don't get the theming, or I don't get it, and it's just kind of a bit boring. And The Game is just, I don't know why, even know, don't even know why it was even nominated for a start, so.
Well, it's a nice, you know, Spiel des Jahres is, for those who don't know, it's the family level game of the year, German game of the year. So it's over the last few years, it's very much been a light game, easy to get into, with a smidgen of strategy, smidgen of tactics to it, to mean that a real gamer, proper gamer, can still get something out of it. And Machikuro's got dice rolling, so it can be quite random, but if you're buying the buildings in the right way, you've got that strategy around the right ones, you know, you're going to do better than people who don't have that good strategy. So I think it deserves to be in that category. I don't know what other things it had to fight off to get into the nominations, but Cult Express is probably the better game. It's probably the one that's going to draw in more people at that level, at that family level. I enjoyed Machikoro. It needed, there are some variants in Machikoro that allow you to draft buildings. So rather than all of the buildings being available from the beginning,
yeah,
there's only some, and when some run out, then others become available. So I think there are ways to kind of switch it up into a bit more of a gamer's game, whereas Cult Express doesn't have that ability. Cult Express is what it is. It does have two variants in the rules of Cult Express.
Well, there's this simple card play, and then there's the kind of gamer, a little bit more strategy or depth to it kind of thing, but there's not much to it. I could play either one and be happy.
Yeah,
I think it's more the theme and the real-time playing out of these bandits running all over the train, trying to rob people and not try and get caught by the sheriff, is the real kind of pull of this game. Plus, you've got a 3D train in the middle of the table.
Oh, it looks gorgeous. And it's got all these unnecessary pieces of rocks and cactus and things.
I don't get those out
don't
anymore.
Don't do anything. Don't you? I get them
out. No.
So my summary of this would be Cult Express, agree, best of the three.
Mm-hmm.
Machikoro, I actually quite enjoy it. I think it's perfectly valid that it's in the nominations. Wouldn't have been upset if it had won. The Game, haven't played, but from what I've read of the rules and what I've heard, what is it doing there? Why is it even nominated?
I know. And it was like a very unknown game. It was just like suddenly, oh, the game's not being, what's the game? And it was like such a poor named game as well. It's like they could have called it something different. And the artwork doesn't fit with a family card game. It's got skulls and fire all over it. So,
come on, any more news? Give me some news.
September, I finally got my copy of Two Rooms and a Boom.
Oh, big news. Next.
Okay. Dead of Winter keeps selling out month after month. Now, I put this in because it's every time Steven gets stock back in, it's gone. And you still struggle in lots of online places and things like that to get a copy of Dead of Winter. And it's not Plaid Hat. They say they reorder, they're reordering as soon as like they're getting new stuff getting sent out. They're reordering it again because it keeps happening. And it's just amazing. A year on or more, and it's just still a wanted game. And
you've forgotten the biggest news, Joel.
What?
The biggest news, 2015, is the Ministry of Board Games.
It's over.
It's over. Long live the Ministry of Board Games.
Long live the Dice, Devon Dice, it should
long
be.
Long live Devon Dice.
Yeah.
So there you go, everyone.
That is
the biggest news of all these mergers, new games, game winners. Biggest news, Devon Dice.
Didn't even say that one. I'll drop this in. August, Plaid Hat Games gets brought out by F2Z, which surprised probably everyone in the industry, apart from F2Z and Plaid Hat Games.
They hope they know about it.
Well, there was a couple of employee or kind of like representatives of Plaid Hat Games that didn't know about it and was quite surprised, because the announcement came over the monitor systems at Gen Con, and lots of people were walking around like it was pre-set up or pre-show set up, and they're just walking around and they put this out on the screens, and it's like, whoa, didn't expect that. So, and I think mainly, I mean, Plaid Hat, it's a great company. They produce lots of great games, and they've used Fallujah, I think it is, that is part of F2Z, for French distribution. So then it was kind of that. Well, yeah, Cody's always said that the owner of Plaid Hat Games has always said that he's always struggled with distributing his games. And he's not, it's not the part he really likes. So this way, F2Z takes over and they deal with all that. And now he can just get on and be a studio and design and produce the games he wants to produce. So, and so that Z-Man is part of this company. So it's not a bad thing.
No, well, you know, there's a lot of mergers and takeovers and things, and who knows what the implications are going to be until the implications happen. I say, let's just wait and see. There'll still be plenty of board games for everyone.
There will be, and it's not the end of the world. I love how like people shout and rant saying, oh, this is the end of the world. The company's being swallowed up by bigger ones. It's like, no, they'll still be around. And there's always new companies coming out saying, yeah, we're going to produce this game, and they become big. And they get swallowed up. And it's just what happens. Happens everywhere in life, so.
Here's some big news.
Go on in.
Warhammer got axed by Games Workshop.
Oh, yes.
And they've replaced it with Age of Ultron.
Age of Ultron? Age of Sigmar?
Sigmar. What's Age of Ultron?
It's a Marvel film.
Oh, yeah. Age of Sigmar. They've replaced it with Age of Sigmar.
Oh, that's an end credit stump. Yes, they did.
You know, which looks very pretty. The rules are a little bit more fluid, as I understand it. And lots of people who spent a lot of time collecting Warhammer Fantasy now...
Burnt all their stuff.
So one person burnt his army. The rest of them can just continue using their army under the old rules. Just keep doing it. It's fine. You know, you're okay. But, you know, I don't know how well Age of Sigmar's going. And also, more Games Workshop news. They've set up a new company to release all their old games like Necromunda and Blood Bowl, Battlefleet Gothic.
Which is pretty cool. Everyone's been demanding that for the last few years. And finally they've listened and said, yeah, why not?
Is that the end of the news?
I think so.
Is that all the news?
So there you go. There's part one. Hope you enjoyed it. Do apologise if the audio wasn't as good as it could be. There was issues, as I said before. We are dealing with these, and we're hoping to make the audio better as the episodes go along. Stay tuned for Wednesday. Part 2 will be coming out, and Lewis is back again. And then next Monday, the new chat show will be out, discussing all things, board games we have played, news, Kickstarter, and anything else we can think of. So, see you again on Wednesday.
Thanks go out to all our families for putting up with our habit. Come join us on our Facebook page, Devon Dice Presents, our guild at BoardGameGeek.com, Devon Dice, number 2124, and visit our website, devondice.co.uk, to find other stuff like Tom's blog. You can find most of the show's information we talked about in this podcast in the show notes. Join us next Monday for our chat show, where we talk about games, news, and anything else we like to. Credits go for the music from Jason Shaw at audionautics.com. Kickstarter song was done by Chad Mead for his Kickstarter project to record his own album. You can find a link to his album in the show notes. Hello, Anyone There song is actually called Echo by Jason Walker, sung by Leslie Bixbury. And a big thank you for listening. And see you in a few days for the part 2.